Blog Talk Radio.
That's way too long. I got to figure this whole thing out. But that's a new opening for me, ladies and gentlemen. What do you think? You got to let me know what you think of that, or should we try a different opening? I've got a couple of others up my sleeve here, but I'm finally doing away with that original one. Or I could keep that one if you thought that was great and just re-record the voiceover and say the right name, Robert Cooperman, rather than the old name, Rocky Benesher, which was the pseudonym I've used for almost a year. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Stage Right, the show that seeks the conservative voice in theater. I'm Robert Cooperman, and I am here with you every Sunday from 1:30 to 2 p.m., discussing the theater, conservatives in the theater, and where the heck are they? If you'd like to get in touch with us today, this show is being pre-recorded. So when you're listening to this at 1:30, or of course on the archives, it's pre-recorded. So you can't call in today, but we do, of course, have a email address for you to take advantage of. That's StageRightAudio1, StageRightAudio1, that's all one word, all together, and just the number one, not spelled out, at gmail.com. That's StageRightAudio1 at gmail.com. I always like to remind you that we are supported by our friends at Xander Business Group. They provide social media monitoring and online risk assessments for your child's online presence. I think parents have become rather jaded and have abdicated the role of parenting, because what they do is they say, oh, well, my kid's not getting into any trouble. He or she is busy on the internet. Well, there's the internet, and then there's the internet and social media sites. So if your child is a user of Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or Pinterest or any of those other things that I know very little about, I do know this, that they are setting themselves up to be exposed, let's just put it that way, by predators out there, by unscrupulous bosses. So you really need to know what your child is doing online. And the internet never forgets, is the point I'm making. Therefore, it's even more important for parents to take a proactive role in protecting their child's safety as well as online reputation. So you'll want to contact Xander Business Group, X-A-N-D-E-R, that's Xander with an X, Business Group for more information. They can be reached at 760-865-9614, at 760-865-9614, or you could email info, I-N-F-O, at Xander with an X, Xander Business Group, all one word, .com. All righty. Well, we're trying some new things besides our new opening on this show. And, I mean, I have to admit that I've been kind of, I don't know if I want to say out of the loop, but I've been kind of having some difficulty, let's put it that way, with this show. And I know I have a bunch of loyal listeners out there, and I don't want to disappoint, but the fact of the matter is I have been having terrible technical problems. And, you know, we've had this for months where all of a sudden the show will just stop and you hear nothing but dead silence and then it picks up. Well, we've had that problem. And I have investigated this with the Blog Talk Radio people, and basically what they always tell me is, you know, it's not on our end. We're sending a very strong signal and something's happening to it on your end. So the last straw, I think, was finally last week. I thought we could live with it. I thought things were getting better, and you know, I guess that was foolish. But last week, I went and had the live show, and it cut out, and it's embarrassing. And then when the show, you know, after I perform the show, and it's live, and then it's archived on my archive page, and you can go and listen to it there. And I think most people who do listen to me listen to it on the archive page. And I went in to see what happened, and I got the last 5 minutes when I came back from the interruption in service. So I said, that's it. I'm done. So let's find out really what's going on. So I made a few more calls, and I found out that, at least what we think it is that my equipment, my modem, it's very embarrassing to say my equipment is not working. As you get older, that I guess is more and more the case. But my computer equipment was not working properly, so I got a stronger modem, a new modem, a better modem, and I have increased the strength of my signal. So let's see if this in combination creates the ability for me to stay on the air for 30 minutes. But just to make sure, what I decided to do today was pre-record the show, which I've done before, ask you to listen to it on the archives, and then starting next week, we can have all fresh shows live as they happen. Okay? All right, so today I have two items on my agenda. The first one is to talk about me. Yay! My favorite topic. No, really, the reason I want to talk about me today is I have mentioned on previous shows, and I hope you've heard it, and if not, I'll make believe it's like the first time. I am a playwright, and I have a play that is being produced at the New York New Works Festival. And the New York New Works Festival, this is the second year of its existence, and it's very, very special for a number of reasons. Number one, it's done in Manhattan. Hey, I mean, what playwright doesn't want to have a play produced in Manhattan and Midtown Manhattan, you know, in the Times Square Arts Center, specifically the Electra Theater, okay, the Electra Theater. So that's an exciting thing in itself. And, you know, when you tell people I'm having a play produced and you say, where? Oh, Peoria. Oh, that's nice. If you tell them it's in Manhattan, it's, oh, really? Really? Their eyes light up. So this play is being produced in Manhattan. It is a short piece. It lasts about 20 minutes, and it's entitled The Flower Stand. And it's the story of a young flower salesperson named Eliza. Yes, on purpose, right? And Eliza sells flowers on the streets, and she believes that because of what people buy and when they buy them, she understands all about them psychologically and culturally and anything else. And she does this without having to ever take any kind of course. She just knows this about people based on the flowers they buy. But there's one person who's completely befuddling her, and that is Mr. Goldberg. And Mr. Goldberg buys a bouquet every single day. She calls it the Goldberg bouquet. But she doesn't know why he's buying it. So she asks him some questions, and she figures out all different reasons why Mr. Goldberg buys the bouquet. And the hook of the play, I hope, is A, the fun of watching Eliza be wrong every time, and B, the revelation of why he buys a bouquet of flowers every day for the past 2 years. Okay. So that's the hook. So this play was selected along with about 40 others. There's about 40 total in this festival. To perform, have a one-night performance, and this is the second part of what's special about the New York New Works Festival, is that it is judged not only by audience members, by theater professionals. Some of them, pretty well-known names, and the one that strikes me right off the top of my head is an Emmy winner, Hinton Battle. Hinton Battle is one of the judges. Now, if you want to find out all about the New York New Works Theater Festival, it's very simple to do. You just get on the internet and you type in NYNW Theater Festival. Now, that's all one word, okay? NYNW Theater, spelled the correct way, R-E-T-H-E-A-T-R-E, not E-R, right? Theater Festival. NYNWTheaterFestival.com. And when you get to that page, you have all the information about this year's productions. The first round will begin on August 17th. It'll run the 17th, the 18th, the 19th, the 20th, and then the 24th, 25th, 26th. My birthday. And the 27th. All right? Now, my show, The Flower Stand, will be on August 17th at 7 p.m.
at the Electra Theater. Now, let me give you some information, but you can find all of this out on this website. All right. So I think they have here, if you buy tickets to this festival, you'll see the August 17th show. These are the shows that are going on. I'm just going to read the ones from the 17th. Make Your Acquaintance by Davis Alianiello. Two Princes. I know that song. Hey, Princes. Princes here before you. That's what I said now. Yeah, that one. By Christopher. I bet this is different. Christopher Travlos. Okay. The Flower Stand. You heard it, ladies and gentlemen. The Flower Stand by Robert Cooperman. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So that's the, so we are going up. I don't know if this is the order in which we're actually going up, but Victoria, Queen of Tinder by Kat Migliaccio. I really hope I'm pronouncing these things right. I don't know any of these people. I haven't met them yet. La Gioconda by Sean McGrath, also known as Mona Lisa. No, I'm adding that. It's called La Gioconda. And then Au Revoir by Sue Fitzgerald. What I like about these shows, of course I like mine the best, but what I like about all these are they're not one-word titles. This is good. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but playwrights, especially terrible playwrights, like to have one-word titles because they think that that has so much meaning and that you're going to sit there and say, oh my God, what must this mean? And we do have a few of them. I'm not going to name the names of the people, but we have one called Door. We have one called Collapse. Let's see what else we have. Acrophobia. Let's see. Anymore. Believin'. Okay, let's see. Afterglow. Kitchen. Kitchen. Let's see. Eartha. Morning. That's with an O, not O-U. Okay, those are the ones. We have a bunch of one-word titles at the New York New Works Theater Festival. Okay. Anyway, so my show is on the 17th. You can buy tickets if you're interested. You not only get to see a show by me, you will get to see me, and I'll be very happy to meet you. And just all you have to do is introduce yourself and say, hey, I listen to your show, and I'd be delighted to see you. We have the thing about this show is I don't live in New York. You know, I live in Columbus, Ohio. I used to live in New York. I'm from Queens, New York originally, as I mentioned. And I don't have the ability to travel back and forth to New York on a whim to rehearse a play. I also was told by the theater, by the festival producers that, you know, really he wants the, prefers that the playwrights direct their own pieces. You know, you can get a professional director if you want, but, you know. So I said, okay, I want to take control of this. So the only way I could do this is to have, is to call upon the nepotism players. And the nepotism players are me, as Goldberg. My daughter, Heather, is going to portray Eliza. My daughter, Heather, is an actress, and she is going to be going to Wright State University in a few weeks, actually. Go off as a freshman for a BFA in acting. Okay, so it's the two of us in the play. We've been rehearsing here at home. Then we will travel to New York to perform the play on the 17th. Also, we're going to have some music in the play, and that was composed by my son, Matthew, who is a music major, particularly music education, and with an interest in conducting, but he's also composed at Capital University. So we have a family affair. It's a family affair. It's a family. Okay. So we're all going to move in. Now, if we are judged worthy by the audience and the panel, and I'll let you know who's on the panel here. I don't want to get to David Marcus's article. Then we will move on to a semifinal round. Now, that semifinal round would be August 31st or September 1st, 2nd, or 3rd. And then finally, so it sounds like from 40 plays, they skim it down to about 20. And then the finals, if we make the finals, would be September 16th. Now, you don't have to win, because you'd win $500, which, trust me, has not nearly covered what I've already spent on this production, just to fly the first time for a mandatory meeting in New York, which I've talked about on this show. Once the winning is good, but the exposure to the panel is even better. And here's who's on the festival panel this year. Emmy Award winner Lucia Kaiser. She's the first female executive producer of the Johnny Carson Show. Three-time Tony Award winner Hinton Battle. I've mentioned him. Okay. Disney Empire disciple John Jowell. That's S-J-O-N. I hope I pronounced that right. Broadway producer Larry Kay. Emmy Award winner Paul Slatkus. Emmy Award winning producer Vincent Morano. Broadway producer Gene Fish Jr., and I've met Gene. Gene is the one I've been in contact with. Broadway producer Lauren Class Schneider. Broadway producer Emmy Award winner Gordon Hughes. Broadway producer Douglas Denoff. Broadway producer Lisbeth Zindel. Five-time Emmy Award winning journalist Christian Sazadis. Broadway producer R. Aaron Craig. Broadway producer Julia Broder. Emmy Award winner Paula Levine. I hope she doesn't pronounce it Levine. Keep your Judaism, Paula. Emmy Award winner Brian Gramling. And agent Broadway producer Stu Sternbach. Theater executive Michael Botta. These are the people who are on the panel. So it's not your local yokels. It's not just your everyday folks there. These are real theater professionals and award winners. And so that's what's going to go on. Now, if you want to get tickets, please go to the NYNW Theater Festival site and click on Buy Tickets. And if you want to come to see my play, The Flower Stand, we'd love for you to be there. Come over and say hello to me. Let's meet. I'm happy to talk to you. If you do go, they're going to ask you, it's a mandatory question before you can buy the tickets, what play are you here to see? Which I think is a difficult question. What if I just want to go see all of them? Well, choose The Flower Stand. Choose The Flower Stand, okay? Because they have to count how many people are coming, because I'm liable for a number of tickets if I don't meet the quota of 20. It's a very, very interesting festival, folks, and I hope I at least can get to the semifinal round with The Flower Stand. And by the way, there's nothing particularly conservative about The Flower Stand. It is a it's a fairly traditional play, but it is not in any way that I can think of particularly conservative in theme, which means I'm going to be up against a lot of plays that are very progressive, as they like to say, in theme. All right, well, talking about conservative in theme, let's talk about our friend David Mamet. And we spent quite a bit of time talking about Mr. Mamet and the arc about his conversion to conservatism. We still have a lot to talk about with Mr. Mamet. And one of the things I'm interested in is the response to him. Now, a number of weeks ago, we had offered the response of, the Guardian in England, saying that, you know, why David Mamet would now align himself with a misogynist, homophobic, et cetera, all the things that are tossed at conservatives. Movement, why he'd want to do that is beyond me, and I'm so sad, and this and that, and, you know, that deep-thinking view of conservatism. I never know if it's conservatism or conservatism. Anyway, being a conservative. So, my theory, and I'm in the process of trying to prove or disprove, because I'm not one of those people who says, well, even though I can't find any evidence to support me, I'm still right. No, if I don't find any evidence to support me, then I'm wrong. My theory is that once Mamet made that announcement, which, as you know, we read here on the show, announced that in the Village Voice in 2008, and his piece was entitled, "I Am No Longer a Brain-Dead Liberal." I truly believe that the response to that, actually it's why I am no longer a brain dead liberal, came out on March 11th, 2008. My belief is that the response to that is that Mamet's work is going to be considered, not only his current work, which right after that was, or right before I think that was written, he had come out with a play on Broadway starring Nathan Lane, entitled November, and I want to talk about November, but My feeling is that his work is going to be considered not as good, not as important. You know, Mamet is probably the leading American playwright alive today, right? Not Tony Kushner, sorry. And Mamet has always turned some heads, like with Oleana, right, which kind of exposed that battle between the politically correct and the human being, this time a college-level context. But my feeling is not only that will his current work be considered not up to Mamet snuff, but that his previous work will be reconsidered, and that he will be considered now not as good as he used to be. So American Buffalo, Glengarry, Glen Ross, Sexual Perversity in Chicago, The Duck Variations, and all that, Oleana, all that other stuff that people thought was just fabulous, may come under a reconsideration when it is now that it's been revealed that he is a conservative. If that's my theory. I don't know how true that's going to be, but we're going to be researching that. But let's take a look at what our friend back in November of 2014, our friend David Marcus, who was on this show, had a piece for The Federalist entitled Federalist.com, which is a site you should check out. By the way, I also want to give a quick plug to my friends at the Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance. I need to have one of the leaders of that group on this show in the coming weeks. But the Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance out on Facebook. Check them out, folks. Please, because they've got some really great stuff from really great people, and it's the conservative point of view, and libertarians, and we welcome them both. All right, so here's what David Marcus said about David Mamet. Okay, back in 2008, after playwright David Mamet outed himself as a conservative, Jonah Goldberg made the following prediction. We read this on the air. Quote, already critics are saying his work is slipping. Soon they will say his work was never that great to begin with. Okay, so you could be a cynic and say, all right, well, Robert, you got that from Jonah Goldberg, and maybe I did. Let's just say Jonah and I agree with each other. All right, so 6 years on, it's not entirely clear whether Goldberg was right. Goldberg, I love that name. While Mamet does tend to dominate conversations about overrated playwrights, he is still quite popular, and his new play, China Doll, will open on Broadway next year starring Al Pacino. Meanwhile, across the pond, Lindsay Lohan is starring in Speed the Plow in the role originally played by Madonna. Hey, by the way, I saw that original production with Madonna, Ron Silver, and Joe Mantegna. And I'll never forget how we all lined up outside the stage door to see Madonna walk out. She acknowledged none of us. She walked right by, got into her limousine, and pulled off, while poor Ron Silver walked down 8th Avenue all by himself. Isn't that nice? Anyway, the late Ron Silver. Okay. In fact, since 2008, Mamet has had 8 Broadway productions, not including that upcoming one. It is a stunning number compared with the 3 productions of Tom Stoppard, 2 of August Wilson, 1 of Stephen Adley Gurgis and John Patrick Shanley, and this is the best news, folks, I'm adding, and 0 of Tony Kushner. Wow. 0! Love it. And that's not because we are boycotting him. It's because he sucks. All right. And running somewhat counter to Goldberg's premise, the 9 total Broadway productions from 2008 are more than Mamet had in the previous 20 years. By the statistical standards of the Great White Way, Mamet remains the most powerful playwright force in the world. But Goldberg wasn't really talking about Broadway producers, whose bottom line is the bottom line, and who see Mamet's plays as safe investments. He was talking about critics and tastemakers. If we look one level below Broadway productions to high-end nonprofit theaters whose bottom line is whatever they can mooch from donors and the government, we do not see anywhere near the same dominance in productions. Theater Communications Group, that's TCG, a lobbying organization for about 700 of these theater companies, sometimes sees Mamet in their yearly most produced playwrights list. But in some years since 2008, he does not appear at all. This past year, he was not even in the top 20. The contrast is stark. Among Broadway producers whose first question is, what do people want to see? Mamet is unrivaled. But among nonprofit producers whose first question is, what should people see? His shows don't fare so well.
This makes perfect sense, given that many major nonprofit theater companies view their primary mission as the promotion of social values. I'm going to stop there and just say, the social values of the left, isn't that, right? Where are the major nonprofit theater companies whose mission is to spread conservative social values? Where is that group? If I'm wrong, tell me. Somebody tell me. Where is that group? Maybe that's something we have to start. Aha. All right. The current environment of nonprofit theater is one in which diversity has come to dominate the cultural conversation. Mamet is exactly the kind of straight, white, male playwright who must be cast aside now and then to make room for more minority, women, or trans writers. I just don't get it. I'm not disagreeing with what Mr. Marcus is saying. He's just pointing out the truth, but I don't get it. Why must anyone move over for a minority, a woman, or a trans writer? Why can't all of these writers produce a good work and then reproduce it? Who cares who you sleep with? Who cares what color your skin is? Write a good play and we'll put it out there. And I think that's the big argument about conservative plays. On the one hand, you'll hear people say, well, the plays aren't good enough, so we don't produce them. And on the other hand, you hear them say, well, they're by conservatives, so we won't produce them. But the fallback argument is that we can't because the plays are not that good. And I cannot believe that a conservative cannot write as good a play as a transgender playwright. What is it? If you're a transgender playwright, you automatically start out with brownie points? And your plays have to be better? You know, there is this theory out there that transgender people and people of color and anybody who's non-white and not straight somehow know things, feel things, do things better, more deeply, more intellectually than just us white males. You know, they all have it. You know, listen to them. You look at these people with such awe and such a feeling that they are, they know something, that they sit on top of a mountain and know something. Could somebody find me the proof of this? All right, back to our article here. There is one other level of theater in which a playwright's popularity can be measured, but it isn't easy. Every year, there are countless college, community, and small theater productions that fly beneath the radar. Nobody aggregates these productions to produce a comprehensive list of the most produced playwrights, but a bit of research shows some remarkable results. A Google search for the past month of David Mamet, removing Pacino and Lohan from the search, revealed 15 small local productions around the country in the first 7 pages of results. These included productions in Omaha, Fresno, Buffalo, and Peoria. Hey, we mentioned Peoria already. That's twice on this show today. When we consider that the top playwright in the TCG list tends to have 20 to 25 productions in a whole year, Mamet's 15 in the month of October alone suggests a lot of people are staging and attending his work. Similar searches of other contemporary playwrights found nowhere near as many small productions. And don't you think something like that, even if it is David Mamet, is going to scare the bejesus out of people, out of the left? Because what? All these people are watching Mamet? Why, he's a conservative, which means he's a homophobe, and he's a misogynist, and he doesn't like abortions. Oh, my God. And he's pro-gun rights. Oh, my God. Now we're being, now Mamet is trying to propagandize. Anyway. All right, so we are just about running out of time. I want to read this last paragraph, and then we'll pick it up next week. I think there are 2 major reasons for this. The first is the same reason that Broadway produces Mamet so much. People buy tickets. It's a polished, popular brand, and audiences enjoy it. The second reason is that many actors and directors on all levels of theater really like doing Mamet's plays. For many actors of my generation, the performances in the 1992 movie version of Glengarry Glen Ross were nothing short of revelation. Who wouldn't want to engage that spitfire dialogue where humor and tension ride the knife's edge? It is a challenge, but an enjoyable one. Performing Mamet is almost like linguistic choreography. Hey, I'm going to go with my old closing now, but to tell you that I will see you next week. We'll be live. Hopefully this all worked. We didn't get interrupted, so it sounds good. Next week, more of Stage Right. I thank you for joining us. Remember, folks, life's short, so be conservative, will you? This is Robert Cooperman. Don't forget about the New York New Works Theater Festival page. And we will see you next week, 1:30 on Sunday. But for right now, we are exiting Stage Right.